I'm Emily Tackett, and this is Just So, an OU podcast about thought leaders here in the heartland. There's a world of voices on this campus, but there's only one Oklahoma. Today on the show, we went to the office of Rania Ferguson O'Connor, an OU alumna who is objectively the most compassionate person on the planet. I knew Rania in college and always looked up to her, which is why I affectionately call her Ron and fawn over her throughout the course of this interview.
It's already rolling.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, and I have it on hold, so if it won't mess with any buttons.
Aw, hey Ron, how's it going?
Good!
She co-founded the Curbside Chronicle, a nonprofit street paper that employs people experiencing homelessness in OKC. And she started that journey when she was just a sophomore marketing student at OU. She had this completely typical college experience that ran parallel to a whole different world of founding her own business. On campus, she was an RA, she was involved in her sorority, several campus organizations, she was the lead in scandals, but in her spare time, she was also driving around to tent cities, talking to people experiencing homelessness, making pitches to investors, and teaching herself how to become a magazine editor. Now she's the director of the Curbside Chronicle. On average, they sell 10,000 magazines a month, and the organization has helped 20 people transition into housing just this year. Today, we're going to hear more on Rania's story, hear more about the Curbside's holiday campaign going on right now, and some of the unexpected impacts the Curbside has had in the OKC community. Rania, thanks so much for being with us today.
Yeah, thanks for coming out and coming to our office.
When did you first hear about the model of a street paper as a nonprofit? And what stage of life were you in when you started to build the Curbside?
Yeah, so I first heard about street paper at the end of my sophomore year at OU. And I had a mutual friend at the time who was going to school in Nashville, where they have one of the largest street papers in the US. And he told me about the model and kind of the impact that they were having in Nashville with their street paper. And I was really passionate about the issue of homelessness in our community. And so it just seemed kind of like a great thing to give a try. You know, it was like, if it's working there, Nashville has a lot of similarities to Oklahoma City in size and ideology around the region. And so we figured we might as well give it a go. And so at the time, like I said, we really worked on it, building it up my junior year of college while I was in the midst of being a student on campus, which was actually a really exciting and rewarding experience, I would say. I was really in the campus bubble and I loved campus life. I was a part of my sorority. I was active in the International Advisory Committee and the Oklahoma group and a lot of kind of campus activities and council stuff. And I loved that stuff, but this project really kind of pulled me back out of the campus bubble and kind of showed me how my work and my time and my studies at OU could go beyond just campus life and could really kind of enrich the community as a whole. And so that was a really cool experience. I'll be honest, I mean, we really didn't know what we were doing when we started the Curbside Chronicle. Like I said, I mean, we were juniors in college, but we had a lot of determination and we had a lot of passion. And I think that goes a long way.
So what is the street paper model?
Yeah, so a street paper is a publication that employs people who are experiencing homelessness. So we're actually a part of the International Network of Street Papers. There are 115 publications like ours around the world, and we just brought the idea to Oklahoma. So we're one of the only street papers in the Midwest, but as magazines and newspapers, we employ people experiencing homelessness to sell our magazines as a way to earn a more dignified income, and then we help them gain skills to transition into housing and then on to further employment opportunities.
So you were a full-time student at Norman at OU, super involved, especially in the OK group, which consults for nonprofits. And you're also trying to start this nonprofit in OKC. What were some of the biggest challenges during that time?
Oh, man. I think just taking the risk to go for it, I think was honestly kind of the biggest thing that I had to accept and jump into, right? I mean, I think we can all kind of play the self-doubt game. None of us, I think, are ever going to be where we want to be before we maybe pursue passions that we have, right? We can always be smarter. We can always have more skills. You know, there's a ton that goes into that. But I think that there was a lot in just taking the risk, knowing that I was a part of a supportive environment, knowing that we had the Homeless Alliance, which is a large nonprofit, supporting us, that I had professors at OU that were supporting me, that I had friends that were, you know, joining in and saying, how can we help? How can we make this happen? And so I think that that was a huge part of it becoming successful and even becoming anything in the first place, honestly.
I know when you were going into some of these really high pressure, intense meetings to talk to corporate investors and things like that, what was that experience like as a young woman? Like, did they take you seriously?
Yeah, I mean, at first it's hard. I mean, because you are young. And so I think people expect you to have a certain level of being naive and not knowing what the future holds or entirely what you're doing, which is hard. And while there's some truth to that, I will say, right, like I never tried to act like I know exactly what I'm doing. I think that being young, especially our generation now, I just think we have so much drive and so much passion. And I think that like elders see that and they see that whatever we decide to pursue, that we fully invest ourselves in that and that we're really willing. Like, even though we might not have the skills now, I wasn't a magazine publisher before we decided to pursue this passion. But we had the drive to learn those skills and to do kind of whatever it took to make it a reality. And I think that that's what sticks with people about our generation in a lot of things that people are pursuing. Yeah. We're not really waiting. Like, it's like, I think in society, a lot of times it's like, there's been this mindset that you have to wait 10 years, 20 years, however long before you can actually go out and do what you want to do and how you want to do it. And I just think that that's changing. I think that a lot of us are saying, no, I'm going to do it now. And we have to be smart about that, but that doesn't mean we have to keep ourselves from doing it.
Yeah. I don't think our whole generation is like that. I think that it's just you, honestly.
No, I think there's so many cool people doing stuff.
I think it's probably just you, though. Mason, who you might remember from the first episode, was on the shoot with me. He chimes in here.
I love that. Like a lot of the filmmakers and stuff that I listen to and watch and stuff, like the ones that are successful even at a young age, they have that same like mentality of like, you just got to do it.
And you got to learn as you go. You really do. It's like, and if you make, and we've made mistakes, like I will be very honest that we've made some things that I look back and was like, why did we put that in the magazine? Or why did I approach the situation that way? But that's okay because you learn from it. As long as you learn from it, then you allow yourself to grow.
How pervasive is homelessness in the OKC community?
Yeah. So on any given night in Oklahoma City, we have about 1,500 people experiencing homelessness. So that means on the streets, in shelters. This doesn't include our couch homeless population, so individuals that are kind of bouncing from family and friends, sofa to sofa, or people living in their automobiles, just because that is so hard to track. But we predict that based on this one point in time, the 1,500 number, that our yearly total is more close to 7,000 people experiencing homelessness on a year in Oklahoma City. And it's hard. At the Homeless Alliance, we really kind of have this motto of together we can end homelessness. And I think that that is 100% true. Homelessness is a community-wide issue. One nonprofit, one program is not going to end it, right? It's made up of, man, so many different moving parts that involve just, you know, economic inequality as well as housing, lack of affordable housing opportunities for individuals, to incarceration and things like that, mental health funding, I mean, education. It's so varied, the reasons why people end up in the situation of homelessness. And so we've really tried to take approach that we all can play a part in combating that. And then from that, we also like to say it can be heavy. I mean, thinking about these numbers, right? 1,500 people, 7,000 people. And I think that you can get lost in the bigness of that and forget that, you know, those numbers are made up of individuals, right? And how do you end homelessness? You end it one person at a time. And so for every individual that we get into housing and that we help turn their life around, yes, there might be another person that walks through that door that same day, which so our number just keeps recycling, which is hard. But for that individual, I mean, their life has changed drastically. I can't tell you how many vendors have told me, you know, that they'd given up hope that they just thought housing wasn't a reality, that they, you know, contemplated things like suicide, and that they were in serious bouts of depression just because they felt like there was nothing, like that they were kind of stuck in this situation. But then having them get into housing and see that there is more, I mean, it means everything to a person. And that's why we do it. Like, you have to hold on to that one and those individual stories, I think, when you're in this line of work.
Can you talk about some of the barriers that people experiencing homelessness face when they're trying to get a job, things that we may not think about, and the role that the curbside plays in combating that issue?
Yeah. And so, So it's different for everyone. We really like to say that we come alongside people with the Curbside Chronicle. I think in society, we often try to put people in a box, right? And especially with the issue of homelessness. I mean, we see people panhandling, we see people begging, we see people that are sleeping on the streets that don't have jobs at this time. And we try to say, like, well, you need to do this, this, and this, and this, and you need to fit in this box, and then your life will be the way it's supposed to be, right? But that's just not a reality, and that's not understanding of everyone's different barriers, right? So we work mainly with people that are chronically homeless at the Curbside Chronicle. It's not necessarily intentional. We work with anyone who's willing to walk through the door and work with us. It just happens that most of the people needing our services are individuals who have been sleeping outside for at least 3 years at a time, if not more. We have two individuals that we worked with specifically this year to help get into housing that each experienced homelessness for 2 decades or more on the streets apiece. So, I mean, that's 20 plus years. It's almost unfathomable. With these individuals, we have a lot of mental health barriers. And so one of our biggest steps is trying to help people get the services that they need. If maybe they haven't been diagnosed for a mental health issue in years, getting them regulated on medicine for that or into therapy or treatment for that. Substance abuse is also an issue that we see and we face, but helping people overcome their barriers means being supportive to them throughout that. And so we've had vendors that have been struggling with addiction that we've helped get into long-term rehabilitation services that are now celebrating their sobriety and kind of thinking about those next steps. We have developmental barriers and educational barriers. Some of our vendors haven't gone past middle school, and so many of them can't really read or write super efficiently, let alone, especially for our aging vendors that are in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, they don't know how to use a computer or technology, which is really hard in this day and age with the type of work. And if you're older, it's really hard to do physical labor like you did whenever you were maybe in your 20s or 30s or 40s. Other barriers just include environmental barriers that people face. I mean, when you're sleeping outside, you don't have access to hygiene. You don't have access to often transportation when you're homeless. Most of our vendors are walking places, relying on the bus system. But Oklahoma City buses don't run on Sundays. We're the largest city in the United States that doesn't have 7-day service for our public transit system. And so if you get a job, you have to make sure you're not scheduled Sundays, or if you are scheduled Sundays, you have to walk there. And so we've had vendors that have worked other jobs that have literally walked, 8-10 miles every day just so that they could get to work because the bus wasn't running. And so, I mean, it's so different. I mean, and then there's also the social isolation factor that I think is really difficult. Once you've been in this situation for any period of time, it's going to affect you emotionally, but especially long periods of time. I've had vendors really share about how they lost confidence in themselves. Honestly, they lost hope. They kind of felt like they were supposed to minimize themselves and kind of not be seen in the community. But then now that they're a part of Curbside with our green smock on, people are approaching them. People are wanting to have conversations. They're wanting to buy this product from them. And so it changes their mindset. Once again, they feel like, okay, I have a place here, I can be seen, and now kind of where do we go from there? And so I would say confidence boosting is also just one of the biggest things that we can provide. We work with great men and women. They just need a chance. And sometimes that means creating something that meets people where they are so that they can build those skills to move forward. And that's really what we do.
The Curbside has grown so much since you guys have started, and it's helped so many people. Can you talk a little bit about that growth and what it's done so far?
Yeah. Oh man, it's crazy. I mean, I remember the first person that we housed with curbside, and that was really incredible, because that was kind of our, I mean, we knew that other street papers were doing this all over the world. Street papers, our whole international network employs about 22,000 people a year experiencing homelessness. So it's pretty big. So as a network, also as publications, we have a readership of about 6 million readers per month, which is pretty incredible. But we knew that this had been successful in other communities for decades. The idea was just, would it work here? Like, would Oklahomans kind of adopt this? Would they be accepting of it? And honestly, would they help it thrive? Because right now we're selling about 10,000 magazines a month, which is really exciting. But that's made up of literally single purchases and interactions, right? But that collectively is what makes kind of all of the good stuff happen. And so, I think when we first had our first vendor move into housing, that's kind of whenever we felt like, okay, yeah, like we said this could work, but now we're seeing it. And this has changed one person's life. How can we build upon that? And thankfully, so far this year, we've built upon that. And now we've had over 20 people already in their homelessness by being a part of the Curbside Chronicle. And we're hoping to continue going strong in November and December to help more people have that success, and not just in their homelessness, but move on to that next career, move into more traditional employment, which we do really work with our vendors on. We had a woman recently that just moved on to a baking job with a local bakery, which is really exciting. We have vendors that go into restaurant jobs, into warehouse working, and that kind of stuff. And so curbside is something that people use to kind of get their feet on the ground again.
During the holidays, the Curbside Chronicle does a really cool seasonal campaign. Can you talk about what that is and what it's called?
Yeah, so around the holidays, we do something that we like to call Wrap Up Homelessness, where we partner with local artists from Oklahoma to design wrapping paper as an additional product for our vendors to sell. And so vendors sell our product around OKC at different booth events, at different shops. This year, we're really excited because we have a booth at Penn Square Mall that our vendors will be staffing all holiday season long. And so they're able to use that as additional income around the holidays. And then our customers get to wrap their presents with some really incredible, unique, beautiful wrapping paper that you can't get anywhere else. But really my favorite part of Wrap Up Homelessness is the fact that it turns a typically bleak time of year for our vendors into one where they feel like they're a part of the festivities. It gives them something that they're offering around the holidays instead of having to only be on the receiving end of things. And while our vendors love that, we have a holiday party, we get everyone gifts, we celebrate together. While they're thankful to do that, they also want to know that they have something to offer as well, something that customers can enjoy. And so whenever people share their photos with us of their presents wrapped under their tree, I always share those with vendors, and they love that. They love that they were able to contribute to someone else's holidays and to the cheer whenever typically, unfortunately, that might be a typically lonely time for them.
In the past, how has the campaign helped the curbside, and what will the funds raised from the campaign do this year?
Yeah, I mean, last year it's been incredible. I mean, it's our biggest fundraiser of the year right now, and it really helps provide money, like I said, specifically directly to our vendors. Well, we're employing them to work at these we have over 15 booth events we'll be at this holiday season, not including the mall kiosk space we'll be staffing. So that's direct employment for individuals around the holidays so that they can build job skills and use that training to afford housing and to move on to other employment opportunities. Last year during the campaign, 6 of our vendors ended their homelessness in the middle of the campaign, which was really awesome, with the help of funds that they made from the campaign. So we're hoping that we can have that same impact this year, if not more, and help people come home for the holidays. And then also just the extra revenue generated from the campaign. Like I said, it went to support our vendor program and the support that our staff shares with them.
So what is your vision for curbside in the future? And what do you think that it can do now that it's established and the OKC community has accepted it? What do you think, how do you envision it changing OKC?
Yeah. One of my favorite things about curbside is, okay, so not only do we offer employment to people experiencing homelessness, we also offer people a voice through our magazine. We have vendors that share their stories, that write articles for us, that share their talents, whether that be photography or recipes or artwork. And we really try to create a product that our vendors aren't just selling, but that they're helping produce and that they have a part of, right? So that they can be proud of it and that it can be something that's representative of themselves and maybe some of the struggles they faced. And with that, also there's the interactive component that I've mentioned, but that is my favorite part of curbside. I really believe in humanity. I believe in other people. I think we want to engage with people different than ourselves. I mean, heck, that's why we started curbside. Is it bothered me that we saw people having to panhandle, having to beg. I wanted to talk to them, but there were times whenever I even felt uncomfortable, right? How do I start a conversation? What do I say? I mean, they don't owe me their life story just in our first chance of meeting, but I'm curious, how did they end up here? Why is this going on in our community? And I think that street papers and curbside in general, it provides answers to some of those questions, and it provides a safe way for people to feel comfortable interacting, right? And so these 10,000 sales a month, yeah, that's great. That's money, that's income for our vendors, but that's also 10,000 interactions between two people who, unfortunately in society, would normally ignore each other rather than interact. And it gives people a way to start a conversation and kind of get to know someone for who they are instead of where they are or what they're wearing or how they look or things like that. And we've seen so much success through that. So many business people downtown have reached out and said how they have a different view of homelessness now from having a personal interaction with a vendor. They're no longer afraid that they shared something in common with a vendor that they weren't expecting. And I think that's powerful. And that's something I'm hoping curbside can build upon so it can become less of a us versus them mentality and a, you know, this is us, this is our community, and what these individuals are struggling with are also our problems and our struggles, and we might not be so different after all.
Thank you so much for chatting with us, Ron, about the amazing things that you're doing in OKC.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited, and if you guys see our vendors in green vests selling magazines, please consider buying one. It's $2.
If you want to pick up some curbside wrapping paper for all your gift wrapping needs, you can find it at the Social Club and Stash on Main Street in Norman, Postscript right here on Campus Corner, and Cokie Bay Gift Store in the Fowler Toyota. Don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. And if you don't like our show, totally fine. Ronnie has a recommendation for you.
The people that play Delilah. You don't know Delilah?
I know who Delilah is. I know that she...
She's incredible. She's a soothing...
What does she say? Do people like call in and say
they just call in and like talk about their lives, and she like plays them like a Tarzan song or something.
Thanks for joining us today. Just So is produced by me, Emily Tackett, and Drew Bernard. Artwork by Amy Azure. Happy holidays, and we'll see you soon with our next episode.